thanks for joining us on We Dig Plants at Heritage Radio Network. Today's show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. And the sponsor for today is Hearst Ranch. We're broadcasting from two repurposed shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located at Roberta's Pizza, which is 261 Moore Street. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we're garden designers here in the tri-state New York area. Groundworks Inc. is our company. And in thinking about spring and summer, which thankfully is just upon us next week, and in beginning to crawl out from under our books and our seed catalogs, we realize that spring is right upon us, and we are beginning to plan for our clients' gardens and clean them. Next week, we actually get out into the gardens and we start cleaning. So we thought today's show would be about March and what to do in the garden when you're so itchy and you need to get out. So I thought I would start today's show, fittingly, with a poem, one of my favorite poems from E.E. Cummings. It's called In Just Spring. In just spring, when the world is mud luscious, the little lame balloon man whistles far and wee, and Eddie and Bill come running from marbles and piracies, and it's spring. When the world is puddle wonderful, the queer old balloon man whistles far and wee, and Betty and Isabel come dancing from hopscotch and jump rope, and it's spring, and the goat-footed balloon man whistles far and wee.
Nice.
That's one of my favorite poems. So, cleaning the garden. What do you do? It's March. You want to get outside, and this year has been so harsh. So where do you start? Well, Carmen and I spent some time earlier this season in some of our clients' gardens, kind of evaluating the trees. We had to restake a lot of trees. There was a ton of damage to shrubs and trees and limbs and foliage, and I'm sure anyone who's taken a walk in the last 2 days has seen it. So the first thing to do in the garden is to do just that. Take a walk and look at the damage to the limbs and the heaving root balls from, you know, freezing and non-freezing, and the broken stems. So what do you do? How do you tie this up? How do you restabilize that root ball? So first, I thought we would, you know, kind of run through some tasks. So the first thing that we do is we use soft but strong roping. We use PVC or hose pieces with wire through the hose piece so that those hose pieces rest against the trunk or the limb, because you don't want wire, you know, gouging in to the skin.
Yeah, that's very important. And you can get this at a hardware store, either an old piece of hose or clear PVC pipe.
Exactly.
It really helps.
And hardware, you know, for anchoring in should be a rust-proof galvanized steel and a heavy gauge to withstand the outdoor weather. 200 pounds is a good unit of measure. No wimpy eye hooks that will rust.
Yeah.
And root balls should be examined and gently dig them back into place. You might want to add a pinch of fertilizer under the root heave so that the roots feed well as they are put back for bed. You want to look for cracking and tearing on the skin, the cambium of limbs, and you want to cut that clean. You might want to even paint the wound with a tree wound dressing to avoid insect damage later on this spring and summer.
Now, I want to say something, Alice. I want to add a little bit about when you do tie the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to not forget about that anchor.
Right.
Because the tree will be growing,
mm-hmm.
and you'll want to check it seasonally to make sure that the tree hasn't, especially if you're using like a rope or something, hasn't grown around it, and it isn't girdling it, it's called.
Right.
When it's
right.
outgrown, the tree will actually absorb soft materials, even metal or steel, and just mm-hmm. kind of grow around it, which isn't good for it. So you want to avoid girdling. So each year, check the ties. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe even more frequently than that, maybe even 3 or 4 times a year, make sure that it's secure and that it's not too tight.
And realize also that as the tree grows, the height will need to be re-anchored. Carmen and I had a situation earlier this February where you know, we had anchored these evergreens at like a 5 or 6 foot height because that's where we could reach. And then, you know, these trees are now 9, 10, 12 feet. Mm-hmm. So we had to, you know, get up higher, which is very important because the tips in this particular case were actually bending and cracking due to the weight of the ice
and snow. Yeah, we've had a lot of snow and a lot of breakage this year.
Right. So now is also the perfect time to begin shaping trees, roses and some shrubs as well before the leaf appears. Generally, you want to remove the dead wood from last fall. It's very important, however, to know your shrubs and trees' names so that you then know when to prune. For instance, pruning forsythia now will only cut off the blooms that are going to flower in a few weeks. And hydrangeas, same thing. So you need to know when they're going to bloom to determine when to prune. So generally, I'm speaking about pruning things now in March that will bloom later in the season. For instance, roses. They should be trimmed now, just as the leaves are beginning to show signs of swelling. You want to prune to open the center of the plant to allow light and air circulation in and among the canes. You want to make your cuts at a clean 45 degree angle, about a quarter inch above a bud that is facing toward the outside of the plant. And you want to make sure it's a nice clean cut, not ragged. You want to remove all the broken, dead, dying, and diseased woods and any branches that look dry, shriveled, or black. Cut until the inside of the cane is white. And remove any weak or twiggy branches thinner than a pencil. If you don't know what type of rose you have, watch for the plant this season. If it blooms on new growth, it sends out in this growing season, you want to prune while dormant or just about to break dormancy. If it blooms on last year's canes, don't prune until after the flowering.
That's a good general practice. If you're really not sure, mm-hmm. wait, especially if you have a new garden and a new house or a new apartment, watch for one season before you take the pruners out or the loppers,
yeah.
In my case. Because I got to have the big guns all the time. I'm a happy pruner.
Carmen's happy for pruning.
Yeah, that's my favorite garden task. But watch and see when things actually bloom. Then make notes. And Alice and I keep careful notes of all of our clients' gardens. And that's very important because it's a good way to track when things bloom and how things look and tasks mm-hmm. that you have to perform in a season or two in the future.
Right. So, keep those plant tags and kind of tape them into a journal book. And then you can write notes next mm-hmm. to your plants.
Yeah.
So again, you know, you want to make sure that you know the name of your plant so that you know when to prune it. And for trees, generally, you want to prune before the sap begins to run. And what you're looking for when you're looking at a tree is you want to remove crossing branches because, again, you want to open up the interior of the tree for good air circulation. You also want to avoid the rubbing together that may happen in the future. You know, where trees are going to cross and hit each other. So you just kind of want to think about the future when you're pruning.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Alice, that you have, you're not pruning for now.
No.
You know, you're pruning for a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, especially young trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some bushes, of course, that you can cut down to the ground like buddleias and they'll just spring right back in a season. Mm-hmm. But you have to be extra cautious when you're pruning trees because you're really shaping the future. Mm-hmm. Literally, you're shaping the way that they're going to look for many years to come.
So you have to, you know, be cognizant of things like utility lines and house windows and neighbors' fences and neighbors' windows, for that matter, because how the tree grows and how it's pruned while it's young is going to affect that future.
Yeah, and we've all seen horrible examples of what Alice and I term butchery. I mean, yeah. Literally tree butchery, where people literally just lop off the top with no regard to the shape of the tree or its natural habit. And a lot of times that's a result of choosing the wrong tree for the wrong space, and then mm-hmm. they expect pruning to fix it. Well, pruning can't fix everything.
No, you know? Right. Pruning is kind of like a haircut. It gives shape and definition for the year to come, and it promotes annual appropriate growth, which will ward off disease now and later. Mm-hmm. So The other thing you want to do in your garden, which is very cathartic, is raking and cleaning up that crusty debris. You want to get those leaves out of there. That's where mold and bacteria breeds, especially in the spring with big heavy rains like we just had this weekend. April showers bring May flowers, but it also brings pests and mold. So air circulation and cleanliness, again, go hand in hand. So get that debris out of your garden beds. You want to cut back any herbaceous perennials. Those are the soft tissue perennials as opposed to the woody stems that didn't get cut back in the fall. Things that you left standing because you wanted something to look out your window at. You want to remove leaves and you want to cut those perennials down.
I'm sure they're looking great right now.
They're so pathetic.
Things, I know mine. My grasses look like a herd of elephants stampeded
exactly.
across them.
And those grasses can be cut hard.
Yeah.
But the herbaceous perennials, I'm talking about things like asters, astilbe, echinacea, those types of things. And with the woody perennials, things like Caryopteris and Buddleia that Carmen spoke about earlier, Artemisia, lavender, cut these as well to about 8 inches from the top of the soil because bloom occurs on new growth. So you'll know when it's time to trim these, to cut them, as they will begin to push out new leaves towards the bottom of the plant. So cut just above where these new leaves are emerging. And again, grasses, you can cut those back to a few inches above the soil and remove all the debris that you've cut down.
And it'll look so much cleaner too. Pruning now and cutting everything down, you'll be able to see what the new growth, you know, how it's looking. You might find that the grasses also have to be divided. As you see it coming mm-hmm. out of the ground, it might not have survived the winter as well. You might realize that it's overcrowded. So only if you clean up will you be able to evaluate and see what's really happening and what you need to do next month
exactly,
in the garden.
Which is really the dividing month.
Exactly.
And then with evergreen and semi-evergreens, things like hellebores and heuchera and iris, these plants in our zone here in zone 7 never quite go dormant, but they still could use some tidying up. So trim back the tattered foliage to encourage new growth. And the other thing you can do right now is clean your pruners. So this should actually be done probably twice a year. We usually take them apart completely for maximum cleaning. We take the screws out. However, remember the order that you've taken them apart. Keep those screws in a safe place. Use a mild dish soap and a cloth for a preliminary cleaning. Steel wool and other cleaning solvent for rust and sap that gets stuck on the handles and on the blades. And you want to sharpen the blades. So use a stone and work in one continuous motion away from you on all edges of the blade. And then you want to reassemble it. So that's why you have to keep those screws and keep the motion fluid of the pruners with a spot of spray lubricant and wipe off the excess so it's not like drowning.
Well, another shortcut that sometimes Alice and I do, because we have so many pruners and so many tools that we have to keep sharp, and ours get probably a lot more use than a typical gardener's pruners would, because we do dozens mm-hmm. of gardens. We put a bit mm-hmm. on a drill, mm-hmm. and then we sharpen a lot of tools that
way. Like a sanding stone.
Exactly. And actually, mm-hmm. you can do that with your spades and your mm-hmm. Shovels, too. If you sharpen the edge, it'll cut into the soil a lot easier.
Yeah. Exactly.
So those bits will make the process easier.
And power tools are always fun. So
yes.
So sharpening and cleaning your pruners will save you a ton of money. It will ensure clean cuts on your plants, which will save your plants and your tools. So another thing to do right now is clean your pots. You can wash them with a mild soap to remove the oil, leftover soil, and fertilizer salts. Wash the catch trays as well, where the water sits, and make sure that the drainage weep holes are free of stones and soil, which could impede proper drainage later on. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back with more tips and what to do in March.
Welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. That was Springtime, Seventh Grade Romance by The Very Most. Alice and I were just talking about what to do in the garden in March because we're all itching to get out there.
Marching through the garden.
Marching through the garden. And Alice and I shared about, you know, cleaning up. So now that you've cleaned up, you're ready to plan and plant. In our zone, which is 7, as Alice mentioned, now is the time to sow cool season crops, either directly in the garden outdoors, or start them indoors in like flats or small pots. Now, if you're not in zone 7, most annual seeds are usually sown indoors about 5 to 6 weeks before the last frost date. And you can find out your zone and your last frost date by looking at a USDA zone map. So you can find that, I'm sure, at Google.
So nerdy.
I know. That's me. Seeds you can sow directly outside in late March, if the weather permits, are things like arugula, collards, lettuces, onions, beets, and also some other greens like spinach or kale. They can take it. You know, even if it stays kind of cold, they'll germinate and come up at the right time.
They're cool weather.
Cool weather. They like to germinate when it's cool. Now, you can also directly sow early blooming flowers, not just vegetables. And some that you can put out are cosmos, calendula, pansies, sweet peas, and nasturtiums. And some of these are recommended to directly plant outside because they don't transplant well. And if you start them indoors and then you know, kind of rip them out and put them in the garden, they don't really like that. So it's best to just wait till the end of the month and then just, you know, put them out in rows. Now, if you want to start some seeds indoors now so that the seedlings are ready to set out and to harden off in time for planting, which in our zone is about after May 15th is our last frost date, you can start right now tomatoes, peppers, broccoli, eggplants, basil, okra, and these are warm season crops. These seeds will not germinate in cold soil.
They need 70 to 90 days.
Yeah,
right.
And they need soil temperatures that are much higher than we have right now in March. So you start them now. Hopefully you've ordered this, you know, this from the seed catalogs, or you go to the garden centers have plenty of seeds now. Mm-hmm. And you can start them indoors. You can also start some warm season flowers right now. For example, Nicotiana, which is flowering tobacco, Cleome, salvias, and verbenas. Those are great cutting flowers. And if you have enough space, you can start them indoors and have a lot of plants to set out. And then,
a lot of color. Those are big, big color for the garden.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's fun about starting seeds too is indoors, the process it can be tricky, but it's very gratifying. And usually you start way more than you need so you can share them with your friends. Like everyone's done that, you know, in their apartment. Now, of course, if you sow your seeds outdoors, your planting bed has to be really well prepared. It has to be well turned over, cleared of any large stones. You'll want to enrich it with some compost, and you want it to be raked nice and smooth. It has to be very soft and friable. These are like, you know, baby plants that you're going to be, little seeds or baby plants that you'll be setting out there. So you can't just, you know, dig a hole and stuff them in there. You're not going to be very successful that way.
And you know, you want to make sure to not bury them too deeply.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to get into. On the package, there's a lot of information, usually on most good seed packages. And one of the things they focus on is planting depth. And for some seeds, that's very important. Some seeds will not germinate if you plant them too deep. They need a little bit of actual sunlight to germinate. So really, if you're not going to follow any other instructions on the seed packet, follow the instructions on what depth to plant them. That's really, really important. Mm-hmm. If you're going to start seeds indoors, you really need good light. And I'm talking about usually you're going to have to get supplemental fluorescent light. Most apartments and homes do not have enough light to germinate seeds. Mm-hmm. So that's why they sell those little like hanging fluorescents specifically for that purpose. Because if you put them on a windowsill, what's going to happen is the plants will grow towards the light, which is phototropism, and you'll have all these crooked and like weak seedlings.
And if you're not, you know, diligent about turning them so that you're, you know, sunning every side of them.
Yeah, good exactly. So, and they need constant moisture and they need good air circulation. Mm-hmm. That's very important. Some people think, oh, I'll just put a plastic bag over the seed flat and that'll be fine. But that can also cause a lot of problems. So the last time that I started a large batch of seeds was when I was pregnant with my son. And that was the last time I was really super ambitious about starting seeds indoors. And I was
seeds and seeds.
Exactly. I was 9 months pregnant and my entire kitchen was filled with flats of vegetables. I guess I was in a nesting mode, of course.
Sure.
And I had way too many plants. So now I usually start with plants. And with some exceptions, but it's fun to do that. Now, if you're a novice, a lot of you might fall into the category of overwatering your seeds, thinking that you want to keep them moist. So that can cause a condition called damping off, which is actually a fungal disease that can kill a plant like within a day. Mm-hmm. So if you see that your seedlings are wilted and there's a black and rotting area at the base of the stem, you want to remove and discard that seedling right away. To prevent infecting the other plants, you want to cut back on the water and you want to improve light and circulation around the plants and watch the other plants for signs of trouble. So that's one tip that you want to look out for. Now, of course, knowing your zone and your last frost date is important, but it's intended as a guide. And as we saw this last weekend here in New York, nature doesn't follow anybody's calendar.
Right. Guide.
So, yeah. Hello. So just use your common sense and watch the weather before you set some things before you set the plants out, even if it says, oh, it's May 15th, I should put them out. But if, you know, we're having a freak hailstorm or it's unseasonably cold, don't do that.
It's really more about temperature.
Yes, yes. So one of my favorite vegetable garden books is that I refer to sometimes is 25 Vegetables Anyone Can Grow by Anne Roe Robbins. Now, if you can find that maybe at the Strand or something, it's a great book to have in your garden library. This book was actually published in 1942 and was directed at new gardeners who, out of necessity, were having to produce some of their own food because of the war shortages.
Or the economy.
Yes.
In 2010.
Exactly. So I'm not trying to discourage you, but let's face it, unless you're equipped with a greenhouse, a heated garage, or a shed, starting seeds indoors it can be a pain. So if you only had to choose one plant to grow from seed, if I had to choose one, it would be the tomato.
Sure.
So now, of course, our opinion of the tomato has changed a lot since the English herbalist Gerard wrote in 1595 that these quote-unquote love apples yield very little nourishment to the body and the same naught and corrupt. Now the tomato is the poster child for the heirloom vegetable movement, and with good reason. So, you know, you go to the markets, you go to the farmers markets, and you see these like pink, you know, tomatoes or yellow tomatoes and orange tomatoes. You can grow those and you can grow them successfully from seed. Actually, tomatoes are pretty easy to grow from seed. So if you want the greatest variety, start them now so you can set them out in time to put them in the garden and have them in summertime. So
and that homegrown taste.
Oh,
and
there's
that
nothing.
Smell.
There's nothing like it.
If I could invent a perfume, it would be called Tomato and Grass. I think
there might be one.
I'm sure
you
there
know.
Is. I think the Gap did it actually.
Yeah, probably. So we're gonna put more information and maybe some vegetable poetry on our Facebook fan page later on tonight. But we'd like to introduce a special guest that's with us today. His name is Max Selfridge. He happens to be my son. And we're going to diverge a little bit and talk about virtual nature. Max is going to review a new video game called Plants vs. Zombies. Hi, Max.
Hi.
Hi, Max. So tell us about this game. How does it work? Plants vs. Zombies.
You have to protect your house and you have a front yard. There's a garden. You
okay.
have to plant all different kinds of plants and you have to just kill the zombies before they get to your house.
So where do the zombies come from?
They just come from the streets.
Oh, I know how that feels.
Yeah.
So all these plants, what happens? Do they grow and they kind of twist up around the zombie? Or
how do they kill those zombies?
Well, there are different plants and all the different plants kill them differently.
So what's the number one plant, the one that has the most points?
I would have to say the a doom mushroom, which creates a meteor. So a meteor comes and kills everybody next to it.
And it's called a doom mushroom.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what's the weakest one then? like
the pea shooter. It just shoots peas.
Somehow that seems appropriate.
That's funny because I just started my pea shoots yesterday.
Ba-dum-bum. I knew this was linked somehow.
Yeah.
So what happens if the zombies are not killed and they get to your house?
To the house?
Yes.
They eat your brains.
Oh, wow.
Boy.
And are they scary? I mean, are these like really bloody and scary zombies?
I think 5 and up could handle it.
Yeah? You think 5-year-olds and up can handle it? Not too scary.
No, not too scary.
So how do I play this game?
There are things coming down from the screen that they're called the sun.
The sun, okay. Sun,
and you have to click on them.
Okay.
And different plants cost different amount of suns.
Okay. I see.
So also if you buy like a special mushroom or sunflower, they give you extra sun.
Okay.
Some plants call.
Oh, right. Sunflowers give you sun power.
Yeah.
Right?
And then that doom mushroom. So this is on the computer, right?
Or on the iPod Touch or iPhone.
Okay. Good plug.
So do you actually plant the plants, Max, in the garden?
Yeah, you plant the...
You plant them. And you have to strategically plant them, right? You have to place them in front of the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. What do the zombies look like?
Well, there's a Michael Jackson zombie.
Is there?
I'd say. And what else?
There's a grandpa zombie that when he loses his newspaper, his pants fall down and he goes crazy.
Okay.
Is that right? Did you actually kill him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he was coming into the house.
Tell me more about the zombies. Describe them.
The Michael Jackson one, mm-hmm. There's a spotlight on him, and he does a dance, and it summons his minions that have bandanas on and sunglasses.
Cool.
So he comes like Michael Jackson comes in a pack.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So you wouldn't say that this is a game just for plant nerds, right?
No.
You'd say that it, like other people...
It's kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah? It's cool. You'd recommend it?
Yeah.
So cool. are you gonna buy the full version? What do you think? Or are you just going to stay with the downloaded version?
I think I might buy the full version because it's really fun.
What's special about the... Do you get to more levels? Or
you get more levels, more plants, more different types of zombies, and more mini games.
Plants is good. So I bet they have, like, there's probably more, you know...
Like,
more
there's a squash.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's a squash?
And a triple pea shooter.
Okay.
Isn't there, like, a cherry bomb or something,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, there's a cherry bomb. It costs 150 sun and... It kills everybody within 4 squares. It costs, yeah.
What about the nut? There's some kind of walnut?
Walnut.
What's that? Tell me
about
that.
It's something to protect.
Mm-hmm.
Protect your house. It's like, looks like a walnut, and you put it on one of the squares where you can plant things. It takes like 50 shots to kill it. It's really hard.
But what does the zombie do with the walnut?
It just eats it.
So it distracts the zombie. The zombie eats the walnut. And
once it's done, it just goes on because it's good protection. It's like a wall. They have to destroy it.
Okay, so how many stars would you give this game out of 5 possible stars?
4.5.
Wow, cool. That's impressive considering how many games you play.
So how do the graphics look on the plants? Does it look real? Because you know a lot about plants.
Well, it's kind of a little bit too animated.
Oh, too animated.
So zombies are good, though.
The zombies are good. So the plants are a little too cartoony?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. And the zombies are a little more realistic as far as zombies go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, Max, thank you so much for that review, Plants vs. Zombies, by our very, very great friend, Max Selfridge.
We'll have to bring you back in the next segment.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for listening to We Dig Plants, Heritage Radio Network. Hearst Ranch was our sponsor today. Thanks to Jack Inslee for producing and Nat Wiener for engineering. And please join our Facebook fan page. Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants. And if you missed any portion of the show, please visit heritageradionetwork.com for archive versions or available via podcast. And
we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much.
See you in the garden.
Happy marching through the garden.